Now to New York, where the United Nations General Assembly is meeting. And watching proceedings, as always, is the Vatican. Now, the Vatican has a unique place at the UN. It's a non-member state and a permanent observer. No other religious institution enjoys this status and the surprising access that it can bring at the UN. But there's a renewed push to strip the Vatican of this role, and it's coming from within the church. The US-based group Catholics for Choice is lobbying to have the Vatican recognized as a religion, not a state. The editor of Conscience magazine, which is published by Catholics for Choice, is David Nolan. David, before we get to what you see as the negative influence of the Vatican in international diplomacy, how did it come to have this status at the UN?
It was an accident of history that led the Holy See to become a state, inverted commas, at the United Nations. It was a member of various international bodies when the UN was being set up after the Second World War and was invited to participate as an observer. And it then proceeded to insert itself into other conferences and events and signed on to treaties and finally announced that it was going to be sending an official observer, first of all to New York and then to Geneva. And due to a lack of clarity about the rules and regulations about how that would happen, it just sort of turned up and put its name on the office, and there it was.
So it was simply a matter of hanging its name on the door and announcing that it was a state, even though it didn't have formal United Nations recognition?
Metaphorically speaking, I think there were some discussions with U Thant, who was the UN General Secretary at the time, but he made the decision himself to grant them an office and a position at the UN. There was never any vote in the General Assembly.
And yet it's not a nation state as we perceive it. I mean, the Vatican is a religious hierarchy. It's not a democracy, and it's not, as we would think of it, a nationality. So it really is statehood in a very narrow sense.
Yes. The Vatican City is a very small parcel of land. Cardinal Dolan from New York once described it as about the size of a golf course, an 18-hole golf course. In fact, it's considerably smaller than most 18-hole golf courses. It doesn't have a permanent population. Most people are residents by virtue of the fact that they hold a job at the Vatican. And it does issue passports, but they can be rescinded whenever you move on from that job or you lose that job. So, as I say, it does have diplomatic relations with many countries around the world, but that is something actually quite recent. In the 1980s, there was a huge effort by the Vatican to create diplomatic relations because it perhaps felt that its status as a state was in jeopardy.
What do you see as the problem with this rather ambiguous nature of the Vatican status at the UN?
I think the major problem is that it speaks out of both sides of its mouth. It pretends to be a state representing a population of about 1,000 people, yet when it suits it, it says it's the representative of a religion to which there are about 1 billion believers. And those people, the vast majority of them, are already recognized at the UN through their own countries. And it claims to answer to a higher being. So when it speaks as representatives of Jesus Christ on earth. And it can be very difficult to disagree with its representatives when it does that. If you ally that with the extremely conservative and trenchant positions it takes against family planning, against abortion, against extramarital sexual relations, you have a recipe for disaster because it sits there at the UN and it objects to anything which progresses reproductive rights around the world. And it does so claiming to speak for a religious being, and is very problematic in that way.
Now, in your recent article in a recent edition of Conscience magazine, you raise several issues that are of concern to you as a group representing liberal Catholics. One has been the Vatican's position on the rights of the child. Now, this does seem rather incongruous given all that we know the last decade or so about child abuse within the Catholic Church.
Yes. I think the big thing about the Convention on the Rights of the Child is that when the Vatican signed it, as it often does when it signs these treaties, it said, yes, we're signing this, but there are all these provisos that we will have, and we may not actually live up to everything that's in the treaty. And just on the very basic level, the Vatican is supposed to present 5 yearly reports to the UN about how it's reflecting the wishes of the treaty. And 15 years after it signed it, the Holy See, the Vatican, has not presented any reports. And as you say, this is particularly disturbing given what has been going on in many countries around the world around the sexual abuse crisis. And one feels that the Vatican is saying, we're not going to submit a report because that is going to only open up even more discussion and debate about how well we are adhering to the requirements of the treaties that we have signed.
You've also pointed to a long-standing position that the Vatican has taken on contraception, and in fact they have tried to block or marshal the numbers against programs that provide contraception. But this is consistent with Vatican social teaching. I mean, should we be outraged about that?
It's certainly consistent with the teachings of the Catholic hierarchy. But as we've seen, Catholics around the world routinely disagree with the Church's teachings on sexual matters. In the US, and I'm sure in Australia, vast majorities of Catholic women who are sexually active use methods of family planning that the bishops oppose. So the Vatican is not representing its own adherence when it speaks against family planning, either at the UN or elsewhere.
Will you mention this position that the Vatican has against birth control, contraception? How has that manifested itself in particular policies that the United Nations has taken or attempted to take?
The problem with the United Nations is that it tries to operate by consensus. It tries to get everybody on board. And we often find that in situations like that you end up with the lowest common denominator. So if any individual around the table or country at the UN objects to a certain policy, it means that there are endless discussions about how the wording can be changed to acknowledge that position, or in some cases, language is what's known as bracketed, which means that it's in the treaty or it's in the final document, but the countries do not have to follow it. And the Vatican has been very disruptive at the UN right back from 1994 right through to Rio earlier this year, at organizing a small number of countries to object to anything which suggests that women have equal rights or that reproductive rights should be extended to more people. So it isn't always the Vatican that's doing it, it's often other countries. But you can see the Vatican's fingers are there pulling the strings on many occasions.
Well, how do other countries accede to this Vatican power, though? I mean, you say it's based on consensus, but surely there'd be a number of democratic governments. One thinks of Europe, the Nordic states, Canada, where the Vatican's influence would be very limited, that those countries would not want to fall in line with the sensibility of a conservative religious institution.
That's a very good question. Unfortunately, it's the case that some countries are too willing to bend the knee when it comes to the Vatican, and that they see a man or a woman in religious garb and they don't want to disagree with them. Other areas, for example, in Europe, they organize themselves in blocks, in groupings, and if one of the countries does not want to go against what the Vatican says, then the whole grouping has to follow along with that. And finally, as I say, the Vatican has proved very adept at ensuring that the United Nations just becomes log-jammed if they don't get their way.
As I understand it, David, there have also been some rather interesting, almost unlikely alliances that the Vatican has formed on particular issues, including with some very hardline Islamic states.
That's true. The Vatican marshaled some extreme coalitions with Libya and other extremist regimes that were very, very disruptive in opposing women's rights. And we know that some of the countries that they organized with were ones that put women to death for so-called adultery, for extramarital sexual relations. And the Vatican had no shame in organizing with these countries because they felt that the end justified the means and that if they got their way, it was more important than who they were seen to be in bed with.
Well, David Nolan, editor of Conscience magazine, thank you for being on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thank you so much for having me.
And this is the Religion and Ethics Report. You're with me, Andrew West.